T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Put him in the hole. Put him in the Hall of Fame. Parkinson Spiegel to the rack. Count it in a foul.
We're going to crank it up nonstop.
Won 3 straight games to start this series. So it was a game 7. They stand eye to eye with history, and they did not blink. The Heat are going to the NBA Finals. What a win on the road. 3rd win in this series.
So history was not made. If you get a 3-0 lead in the NBA, it's happened 151 times before, and now all 151 times that team ended up winning the series. This time it went 7, and the road team ended up winning and prevailing, the Miami Heat. And I heard Dan talking about it with Layla. She's like, oh, what a terrible game. What an unenjoyable game. What a bad game. And the basketball was bad. But you know what I really enjoyed? It happening in Boston to Boston sports fans.
Ha!
That was great. That, like, sad Celtics fan shots, they got run out the gym at home in game 7. A lot of quit in those Celtics.
It's the quit we saw in the first 3 games.
They folded up, man. That was hilarious.
Did Joe Mazzulla say again after this game that he didn't have them ready to play?
Well,
I think he did.
They'll be ready for games 8 and 9. just a complete embarrassment of a game 7 performance. But
yeah, guys, I'm gonna admit it. We spent too much time watching the town this week.
Yeah,
we should have been thinking a little bit more about basketball. But I had Ben Affleck and Jeremy Renner on the brain.
And understandable, right? The Lindas want you home, and now you're going home. And now there's all sorts of conversation about Jaylen Brown and the contract and whatever. And we could talk about the Heat stuff. But Joe Mazzulla clearly had a rough series, but his team did come back and win games 4, 5, and 6.
They did, and maybe they felt like it was going to be fait accompli. I know Kevin Millar was up there, because Millar is the guy who said when the Red Sox were coming back from 3-0 on the Yankees,
yeah,
don't let us win 1.
Right.
Don't let us win 2. And so Marcus Smart quoted that stuff. I think Millar and maybe Demp too, or maybe just Millar up in Boston for intentional talk this week, talking about that. But yeah, so like they fight all the way and get it back there, but then to show up like that was chump stuff in game 7.
Yeah, it was, but like I don't know how people weren't finding that funny. Maybe you don't find Boston sports fan angst funny once they had so much winning recently, and yeah, some of it's jealousy, but like Texter points it out, excellent anecdote. Jimmy Butler winning the Larry Bird Trophy for Eastern Conference Finals MVP in Boston. Hilarious. The Eastern Conference Championship Trophy.
The Bob Cousy
Trophy. Pat Riley being there with a bleep-eating grin on his face because how much Celtics fans hate Pat Riley. So that was great. I enjoyed every minute of it. I thought that game was thoroughly entertaining start to finish. And then...
But I wanted it to be dramatic. I understand what Bernsey's talking about. I wanted it to be fun. It felt like a bonus.
The basketball game itself was not good.
Saturday night was unbelievably great.
Yes.
As you know, anybody who happened to have that on...
Locked in.
My goodness. We had family over the house, but I had the game on. I was the only one watching. I screamed in the middle of a family situation when that Derek White putback went in.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
It was absolutely amazing. It was great sports theater, the whole thing. But I wanted to play for anyone who was either not watching the game live or certainly did something better with their Saturday night of Memorial Day weekend than watching post-game. But... I was watching post-game. I was watching the Inside the NBA crew Saturday night, and they go to Eric Spoelstra. And this is right after Derek White has what Simmons said, Bill Simmons, you know, basketball historian, lifelong Celtics fan, said the biggest playoff play for the Celtics since Bird stole the ball. Right? Or Havlicek stole the ball. Excuse me.
Well, they both did.
Yeah, right, right.
So, yeah, probably Bird, he mentioned.
Bird, more recent. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. He was referencing, but yeah, thank you. But said most, you know, incredible Boston Celtic playoff moment since then.
Wow.
Losing coach steps to the podium minutes after it happens. His team, now a 8-point underdog, heading on the road to game seven. And this is in the first answer to the first question that Eric Spoelstra was asked.
It's just a shame, you know. But look, this is the way this season's been. This is a one hell of a series. At this time right now, I don't know how we're going to get this done, but we're going to go up there and get it done. And that's what the next 48 hours is about. There's been nothing easy about this season for our group, and so we just have to do it the hard way. And that's just the way it's got to be, you know, for our group. And we wish we could tip this thing off right now. Right now, we want to tip this thing off. And let's play another 48 minutes, but we'll wait 48 hours and do this thing in Boston.
What an unbelievable job of setting the tone. Because it's really hard to quantify coaching in the NBA. It's such a player's league. And I saw a Spectrum stats thing that said that the Heat switched on more pick and rolls in game seven than any of the previous six games by a factor of like 20%. So they did make actual schematic coaching adjustments, and they did think coaching obviously matters in all sports, but it's a player's league. It always has been. It always will be, right? Pop is the greatest coach ever. They were terrible this past year because he didn't have the players.
Well, for sure. But in a playoff series, in coaching matters a lot in terms of the schematics and going for the matchups and adjusting, but it also matters in terms of the atmosphere you're providing and the backdrop you are offering and what you expect from your players and demand from them. And he's a badass. I never thought at the beginning that he was going to evolve into what he's evolved into, which is an incredibly strong and stable, wise guy in his 50s now as a coach.
The guy who everyone thought was riding the coattails of LeBron and Wade and Bosh.
And Riley
is now fairly universally considered the best coach in the NBA. Pop with the longevity in the ring, Steve Kerr with the talent, but in terms of actually maximizing it, like the Heat overachieving in the biggest games. And to your point, when coaching actually matters in the NBA, because it really doesn't matter a ton in the regular season because you're not really doing individual game planning for opponents.
So that side of it doesn't matter as much. That's
what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. The X's and O's, right? Because you're not. How often do we hear like guys like Rondo or LeBron and like the real smart Andre Iguodala, the real smart cerebral players are like calling out the sets from the bench because teams aren't changing the schemes or the calls or all that game, because you can play four games in 5 nights. Like, but in an NBA playoff series where it's best of seven and you really can focus in on one team and adjustments and then adjustments to the adjustments and all of that, it does take on a bigger role. And Eric Spoelstra's teams overachieve in the postseason consistently. That they were down in the fourth quarter in the second play-in game to the Bulls. They're the 8 seed. And now they are a huge underdog, but they are the Eastern Conference champions after being in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. That's amazing, man.
It absolutely is.
That answer just impressed me so much. For if you are a believer that team follows coach in terms of vibes, leadership, tone, all that, what an incredible tone to set after one of the most devastating losses you could possibly endure.
I think that whole organization follows Pat Riley. And I'm not trying to diminish Spoelstra at all, but it's just like it continues to be this incredibly healthy place because of Riley and Spoelstra and the culture that they've built there. And Spoelstra still knows it. Did you see this quote? It was in the Brian Windhorst piece about after game six and talking about how Pat Riley was smiling so much there. that Spoelstra said, Pat feels a certain way about Boston, so I make sure everybody feels a certain way about Boston. That's part of my job as the caretaker. The caretaker. He's the head coach. He could have a massive ego and make it about him, but he knows he's just kind of doing Pat Riley's bidding in that job to help their culture be what it is and help what they do.
Yeah, but he's also clearly a great tactician, man. Like, how much is Pat Riley motivating players on a day-in, day-out basis for that organization?
That's his job. That's his job to motivate them on a day-out and day-in basis. But also, Pat walking by simply with the presence and he, whatever his version is these days of throwing the bag of championship rings on the table, he's got that largesse, which blows everybody away, which is a big part of what got Jimmy Butler in line and willing to do everything that he has to do.
Did you see the thing that ESPN Stats and Information put out about Riley, that he's now been a part of 25% of the NBA finals in league history?
Wow.
Player, coach, and president.
That's insane.
That he, I think it's like 24.9% of all NBA finals in league history, Pat Riley either played in them, coached them, or was the team president for.
Player with the Lakers, coach with the Lakers, coach in New York, coach in Miami.
Yeah, president in Miami.
President in Miami.
Yeah.
All of those different times.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
Yeah. I think it's like 16 or something. I'll see if I can pull it up as we speak.
You see that Jeff Van Gundy said that Eric Spoelstra is the best coach in the history of the Miami Heat, which includes Pat Riley and his own brother. He's not wrong.
Yeah. 3 as a player, 10 as a coach, 6 as an executive.
19
for Pat Riley. That is crazy.
That
man.
Is crazy.
What an incredible thing. Speaking of Jimmy Butler, Eric Spoelstra talked about how Jimmy, in his own unique brand of leadership.
It's intense. You know, it's not for everybody, and we're not for everybody. That's why we think it's like an incredible marriage. We never judge him on that. He doesn't judge us for how crazy we get. It's the same language. But the confidence level that he can create for everybody on the roster is incredible. I've almost never seen anything like it, you know, but I have. But he's special, you know, because he does it on both ends of the court. He can play 48 if you need him to. And then he just has a way also that, you know, he has a hard edge and he's gnarly, but he knows how to have a soft touch just to give somebody some confidence at the right time. So that's a special gift that he has.
Oh, I never heard about the soft touch of giving somebody with the edge, but all of it, the whole rest of it was like, yeah, he's a jackass, but he's our jackass kind of thing. He's gnarly. Oh, God.
The thing with Jimmy, like, he has that thing where he will say, I'm the best player in the world. And I think that's insane. I think it's Jokic or Giannis, and then there's Embiid and Steph. And a healthy KD. You know what I mean? I think there are players better than Jimmy Butler. But he also very clearly takes it up a notch in the postseason. And if you believe that, like, doing more with less, like judging it on a scale or a curve.
It's unbelievable.
He's got a case. Or like pound for pound, like the old Allen Iverson thing, right? Giannis, Embiid, Jokic, the huge, like, athletic size freak of nature that Jimmy is not. He's obviously a big guy, but by NBA standards, he is a normal-sized wing. Like, he's got some of that in him, man. Like, I think they're going to get run. I think they're going to get swept in the NBA Finals. But even saying that, it's scary to bet against playoff Jimmy and Eric Spoelstra.
Yeah, it just didn't seem like he was going to allow them to give away that lead last night. It seemed like every time Boston got to within 9, I think it was 8 at one point, then it was up to 16, it was down to 12, then it would go back. It seemed like Jimmy made a play just about every single freaking time. It's remarkable. It's an incredible career, and He just found the right fit. He really found the right fit. I spent a lot of time in these playoffs thinking about if there's anything else the Bulls could have done to make all this happen, if they could have handed him the keys. And it just, this fit is so right because Spoelstra and Riley allow a certain gnarliness from Jimmy, and he tones it down just enough because he respects them just enough to get away with being this version of himself.
Yeah, I mean, the Bulls what if that everyone talks about is, could Jimmy have done it if he would have stayed here with it being Jimmy's team? And I think the answer to that, as we've talked about a few times, is no, because they weren't going to empower him. They didn't even empower Tibbs.
Right.
There was no chance of those of Garpax leaving at that time and all
they,
of that.
And they didn't have like the healthy organizational structure to provide Jimmy with the kind of backbone that he has down there, kind of support and discipline that is inherent to what that place does.
But one that I do think is a little bit more fair, and they brought it up and we used to mock them for bringing it up so much, is what if Derek doesn't get hurt? You know, like if Derek and Jimmy would have been the homegrown Batman and Robin and played together for a decade, what does that eventually yield?
Yeah, I don't know.
Does Jimmy become this version of himself if he's the second best player on the team?
I think Jimmy,
are their personalities too different?
I think he wanted to go somewhere and be the man for better or for worse, and it has turned out for better for him. But that's because of where he landed. But he was definitely going to just go somewhere and be the dude and see if it worked out.
I know, but in an alternate universe where Derek doesn't get hurt, Derek really did just care about winning. You know, like maybe Jimmy would have been better than Derek. Probably Wiz. Like, but, you know, so I do wonder what that alternate universe looks like if you've got the point guard and the wing that play incredibly hard, that Derek's the homegrown kid who gets announced last.
Uh-huh, but doesn't have the killer ego to demand that he's the guy taking every last shot. If anything, Derek had to be pushed into that early on in his career.
So, like, I don't know if Jimmy evolves into Jimmy if Derek is the superstar and healthy the whole way, but that's an alternate universe that I'd love to see what happened. Do they ever get through LeBron in the East, Miami or Cleveland, if Derek is healthy and him and Jimmy are together for 7 years, you know, for each of their primes?
The more that we do this job and the longer I've been around, the more I think organizational culture matters in terms of achieving greatness like that. I mean, every once in a while you can have a team that has a one-off and just powers their way through like player greatness, but like everybody has to feel supported. Everybody has to, you know, be given the opportunity to be the very best they can be. And the Bulls wouldn't have had that. They just didn't have it.
No,
they didn't have it. Thibs wasn't allowed to even be his full self, and then got forced out. So I don't think they would have had. It wouldn't have been the nest to allow that kind of thing to really flourish.
Probably not. I mean, obviously, like you talked about with Jalen Carter going to Philly, Jimmy in Miami with Spoelstra and Riley.
It's perfect.
Feels perfect. Texters are pushing back on the Spoelstra best coach thing. Like, someone's like, are you saying he's better than Pop? Are you saying he's better than Phil Jackson? Like, I didn't say all time, but doing more with less, overachieving, like, no one said Eric Spoelstra was a great coach when he was going to the finals with LeBron, because it felt like they were a cheat code and anyone could have got there. But he's still there all these years later, still overachieving relative to playoff seed. And what? In the finals, in the bubble year, in the finals this year, in the Eastern Conference finals last year.
They were a 3-point shot away from the finals last year.
I mean, what's the more impressive coaching job?
Oh, man.
Him or Steve Kerr? When Steve Kerr had Clay and Steph and Draymond and, for a time, KD. I would say Spoelstra.
This run here with 9 undrafted players. 9 undrafted players. The second best player on this team is Caleb Martin. That's the guy. He's been better than Bam Adebayo. Caleb Martin and Gabe Vincent are the non-Jimmy Butler heroes in this series.
Because there's no Tyler Hero.
And right. And they just beat Milwaukee, and they just beat Boston. They just beat two, and they beat one with this batch. Yes, and Spoelstra's undeniably a better coach than Pop as of right now.
Yeah, and Pop is, of course,
more accomplished.
And the legend, right? He is a better all-time coach. He's a better all-time coach. He is. And I don't think that Pop has lost it, you know, and that's not what I'm saying at all. Mm. But, like, there is something to, I mean, has Pop gotten to a finals without
Duncan
or Robinson? The answer is no.
I don't think that's, we got to know.
The answer is no. You give Pop good players, and he wins. And he wins for an incredibly long period of time.
Yeah.
And he blends international talent better than anyone. And the longest dynasty we've ever seen in the NBA with five titles over 15 or 16 years.
Don Shula went to the Super Bowl with Bob Greasy and Dan Marino and then David Woodley at quarterback.
That's incredible.
That
type of thing. Call it grading on a curve, but doing more with less. I feel like doing more with less is coaching.
That is
the definition of coaching.
We used to throw it up there with Belichick all the time for the Matt Cassel year, that they were great with Matt Cassel. Now, the last few years, it's taken a hit, but that kind of stuff matters. Joe Gibbs in the NFL went to the Super Bowl with Jay Schrader and with Doug Williams and with Mark Rippon and with Joe Theismann.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
He's getting his flowers, but it's very, very deserved. And I think he's going to get crushed in the finals. So we'll see. Malone's a good coach, too. Jason Benetti was a predictably excellent master of ceremonies, which is what that felt like more than play-by-play last night for Liam Hendricks' return. He will discuss the special night at the ballpark next on The Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Matt Spiegel got on with some takes that were pure gold.
A little too much Parkinson.
Afternoons on The Score.
And let us see if indeed that phone call that he's been waiting for months upon months, has come.
He's got the game face on. You would think he's coming in.
One drink of water, two drinks of water, and one ball of emotion. A healthy one at that coming out.
Jason Benetti, the voice of the White Sox, NBC Sports Chicago, is our guest on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. It was bigger than an outcome of a inning or a game that mattered last night.
Yes, it did. And boy, I hate to start with a prediction or a correction for our friend Jason Benetti. That first drink of water, Liam spit it out. So I don't know if that counts as
Jesus.
A drink.
I'm sorry, Jason.
This is the kind of pedantic presence that I need to bring to this show. Because you're so kind, and I need to be a pedantic jackass. So I'm starting there. What do you think? Good move?
Jason.
I'm just glad to be on your television program. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me. Do I get the Parkinson Spiegel home game for coming up? No. So here, it's so funny you said that, Matt. It really is funny you said that. Because I almost said one drink of water that was rejected, right? Like I saw it and I was like, this is no time for levity. But a day after is absolutely time for levity. And I completely agree with you. I was like, man, he just spat that out. But if I do something snappy for that, it's not really gonna fit the moment. And so, you know, I just decided to punt. We're in our own territory. You're at your 35, it's fourth down and six. You know you have a play for it, but you'd rather use it later.
Yeah, no.
That's where I was.
I understand. Look, as a fellow big league broadcaster.
Oh my
Jason,
God.
I understand exactly where you're coming from. I support the choice. I broke Danny.
Do you want to do the rest of this show for me? The start of this interview just disgusts.
Do you want to do the rest of this hit for me? Can you do the rest of the hit for me?
Oh, I've alienated you both. That's an early win.
God. I will say, I know your brain works fast, but that's very fast, Jason, to come up with the line, reject the line, say it's not time or place, and then just punt on the line about the spit out water right then and there. Good job, sir. Good job.
Hey, thank you. I have an editor in my skull that has come over the course of time because I've said some dumb stuff when I was in the minor leagues. And so now I like write stuff in my mind and then I cross it out. I have one of those strike through things like Gmail has, right? If you want to draw a line through a word just for fun as you send it to your friends or whatever, I have one of those. And now people are listening, they're saying, wow, really? Because he still says dumb stuff. That editor, wow, that editor barely went to college.
Get a new brain, Benetti. I am curious of the technical aspect in terms of preparation for a game like that. How much is discussed ahead of time? We're not going to break when he comes, you know, out of the dugout. We're going to follow him when he walks from the dugout to the bullpen. Like, how much of the whole night is planned around that ahead of time versus we'll just have a camera on him and then react?
So they have to kill the break ahead of time because they have to put the sponsors elsewhere. So I knew they were going to kill the break. I knew we were going to stay for that. But the rest of it, it's just our crew has been together for so many years now. Chris Withers, the producer, joined up in 2020, and Dave Turner started directing right around then as well. He does the Blackhawks as well, does a fantastic job. Dave was directing last night. Andrew Blaustein directs some as well. But we all trust each other so much that it's just like, I know they're going to, you know, the technical term for it is cut the game, right, for the director. I know they're going to cut the heck out of it. I know we're going to see a lot of awesome stuff in the ballpark. So we don't really talk it over other than we're going to get rid of that break and we're going to stay whenever that call gets made. But the rest of it is, and I wouldn't want it any other way, and they wouldn't want it any other way either. It's just react. I mean, the prep for this is knowing the person and knowing what makes him tick. And that's kind of it. It's just like the emotion of it. You know, life is preparation for last night for me. And I don't mean to be pithy, but it's true because, you know, cancer has touched all of us in this conversation in one way or the other, right? And like, we've lost people, we've all had loss in our lives. And to think about Christy thinking about possibly losing her husband and having him on the mound, like that's all we need to understand why that moment is so important.
It was wonderful live television because clearly you and Steve were thinking about all the different facets of the story and what it was. And I forget which one of you said, you wonder how much him visualizing this moment helped him through the dark times. But that got me good because you got to assume that every once in a while he would need to hold on to something like that. What facets of the story and kind of Liam's journey were going through your mind as you were doing that and delivering it the way you did?
Yeah, to me, the core of him, knowing him over the past couple of years, the core of him is that, and you know, when we were doing the Sox Degrees podcast, Glenn and I talked to Liam pretty extensively about his level of emotion. And he talked quite a bit about finding the right amount of emotion, that sometimes he goes out there and he's too amped, more than he needs, but sometimes he's a little under amped and he needs the screaming. He needs the veins popping out. He needs to be supercharged and have it all coursing through him. And the idea that his body was rebelling against him and trying to create a situation where that wasn't possible, and now it was again, and him trying to regulate that and figure out where the right spot for him is after all that he went through, I think is an amazing human feat. And for somebody who really had it dialed in to have to go look for that again and look for the right, stasis, right? The eye of a hurricane, where that is for him now, and then where the hurricane walls are, I think that's the most interesting part outside of the sheer humanity of him living. You know, when Danny Farquhar showed up at the ballpark after that he had 4 years ago, that was one of those moments where you say, oh my gosh, he's alive. I cannot believe he's alive. We didn't see Liam at his lowest point, so we just kind of imagined that he's going to be there. But hearing Christy talk about it, that wasn't assured at all.
Hey, Jason, we're going to connect you on a phone line here for a few more minutes. The connection on the app is struggling right now, so we're going to get you up here in a second. Jason Benetti with us.
I'm sorry.
No, it's not. It's probably your fault, but it's not. But we're going to get you on the phone here in just a second. But Benetti is a smart dude, and they do a good job on the broadcast, and they covered it. And what he just said there, like, everyone's life has been touched by cancer. And understanding that human interest story, you're going to tell it in that way. And the survival aspect of it, right?
Yeah, that's top of mind.
that is going to be top of mind. We got Jason back on the phones. Go ahead, Speaks.
Yeah, the part of it, Danny, that I can't stop thinking about, and we've got Jason back now, is that he pitched, as you mentioned it, for parts of two seasons while having this thing that he didn't know he had and questioning himself, because he was a horse in Oakland who would throw 60 pitches and come back the next day in a playoff series, you know? So, like, to be questioning himself, I can't imagine being an athlete and having things fall apart and not knowing why. How strong do you have to be to get through that the way that he did?
Yeah, he knows his body so well, and to have that all kind of come crashing down bit by bit. Do I sound okay? Are we good now, by the way? Are we good?
No, frankly, doesn't sound great.
Really? Really? What's going on? I'm going to take out my AirPods. Give me one sec.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. This is the most 2023 interview of all time. I'm going to kill the AirPods. Yeah.
All right, we're killing the AirPods.
I wonder if that could be it. Him showing us the respect of the AirPod removal in mid-interview. It's going to do wonders, I predict.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, my God, yeah. It's so much better.
Yeah.
It is? It was the AirPods the whole time?
It was. What kind of respect do you have for this show that you're doing the interview in AirPods? What is that? I don't like that.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how millennial this is. I do remember a conversation I had with Liam last year in San Francisco, and he was talking about how he just felt like he wasn't recovering as well as he had before. And, like, is it old age? Do we know? And Passan wrote that in the story, right? Like,
yep.
Sometimes you reach the end of the bell curve in aging in baseball, and you just don't recover as well and all of that, right? So I don't know how you deal with that as such, again, a superhuman type of energy person as he is. And then he goes out. I'm fascinated to see what it looks like next time. Like, that is the postscript to the story for some people, but I think it's just the beginning of the story, because, again, I'm thinking about how he regulates all this, and I wonder what his correction looks like next time.
I agree completely, and obviously the results of the performance last night mean nothing. The fact that the performance happened in the first place is, of course, the story and the success. But the team could use a positive jolt of something, right? Like, not just how Liam responds going forward. I am curious. Speaks is always looking for the bat flip that turned the season around, right? It'd be a hell of a story if Liam Hendricks' return was the catalyst for good baseball on the South Side for a sustained period of time.
It would be. And I just, for me personally, I think it's going to have to come offensively. It just feels like one of those years. I mean, we saw a sustained run of starting pitching that was really good. The bullpen has actually been good in spots recently. I think it's just going to have to be an offensive surge. And I agree with you. Liam's presence should be a jolt and probably will be a jolt. But I don't think a bullpen piece fixes the 12-under we've seen so far. And I'm not trying to say the offense is at fault per se. But last night when Aloy hit that home run, I think everybody in the stands who is prone to have feelings had a feeling that game was going to turn. And it didn't. And if the game turns, it's going to be on the offense. So I feel like it's going to have to be some more selectivity at the plate combined with some more power from guys who typically on their best days give you power.
Is Tim Anderson having fun? You have a good relationship with him, Jason. We've seen you talking with him in the clubhouse and such. I hope he's having fun, because we're better. The Sox are better when he's having fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's having fun. I do. I think he's having fun playing baseball. I absolutely think that's true. I also think it's been a really tough year in the power department. It just has. And, he's hitting the ball on the ground a lot more. And I do think he's having fun. But I think Tim is one of those guys who has a lot more fun when the team wins. And he knows when he's not helping. So I think that, I think that tempers it.
So spoiler-free answer here, Jason Benetti. You are a fan of good writing, of good television, of good art and entertainment. I'm curious what you think was just accomplished by Jesse Armstrong, the creator, and the writing team of Succession.
A phenomenal show for anybody who has ever been in a corporate structure that they think is fraught, but also just a show that proves you do not have to have anyone likable at the core to succeed. And I was talking to a friend of mine today about the possibility of like Kieran Culkin acting again and what role he would play, because I don't know that you can do a whole lot better than Roman for a great actor like that. What a character, right? I mean, truly at the core, at the middle of the human is just a sad person. And I think Jeremy Strong is great. And I think Sarah Snook is great. And I just, the other part of the conversation I was having with my friend is, I think it would be really funny to have like a Twitter account dedicated to taking the three Roy kids and putting them in Disney movies, like casting them in Disney movies. And the first one I thought of was like Kendall as Jafar and Shiv as Jasmine, and then Roman as Iago in Aladdin.
That's the biggest pothead thought of all time. And I know that's not your brand. So that is amazing that you got there. How long did that take? Yes, I'm in. I would box office. Yeah, Jeremy Strong as Jafar is perfect. That's incredible. And yeah, maybe that's influenced by me having a 3-year-old, but that's amazing.
Yeah, no, I was talking to Kevin Brown, who's a good friend of mine who does the Orioles, and
he's
we were
great.
Just kind of batting around thoughts about Succession, and he's a super smart guy, and we kind of just got there, and I said, well, wouldn't it be funny if we cast them in movies? And he said, what if it's only Disney movies?
Yeah, that's really, really good. Did you have it, like, was there a runner-up? Like, are we casting Beauty and the Beast?
No, I'm thinking about it right now, and I mean, I think it's easy, like in Little Mermaid, right? Like Sarah Snook is Ariel, and then Jeremy Strong is either Ursula or the guy character. But I think
no one
Kieran
knows his name.
Culkin, right? Kieran Culkin is either Flounder or Sebastian, but I don't know.
I think you got to go with Sebastian there.
Under the sea, under the sea.
God, is that good? All right. Well, now you're going to be inundated with like 20 texts from me about Succession finale, Jason. Hey, good stuff last night, man. That was great. That was great television. And you guys handled a very important moment very well. So kudos to you guys.
Hey, thank you. Can I just let me say, like, I know it's cool television and everything that goes along with it, but I will say, like, Liam Hendricks and Christy Hendricks are the people that you can truly, and you guys know, like, I'm not going to say this unless I really believe it. They're people you can truly root for, and they do a ton for people in Chicago and everywhere they go. And, like, I am so glad they're back in the White Sox existence, because I do think it helps.
I think that added an undeniable level of niceness and enjoyment to the thing last night and the entire story. We agree. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, guys.
See ya. That's Jason Benetti, voice of the White Sox. A couple of transactional news items on both sides of town we can get to. Parkinson Spiegel on the score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
The afternoon show, the police of 670, the score.
Afternoons on the score.
Thanks for hanging out. Parkinson Spiegel on the score. The White Sox traded Jake Marisnyk to the Tigers for cash considerations.
Love that guy.
The team announced.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Cash considerations? He's a stud. Love cash considerations, that guy. All right, so Jake Marisnyk gone. Excess outfielder. 4A guy who's bounced around a lot lately. Cub fans might remember him from over there. But the bigger move is on the north side.
Hayden Wesneski is back. Michael Rucker has been optioned to AAA. David Ross telling the beat reporters, Hayden Wesneski is going to the bullpen. Long term, still see him as a starter.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to get the best pitchers down there as possible. So Wesneski in the bullpen for the Desperate Cubs.
All his appearances were starts as a Cub, went down to Iowa. They were all starts down there. Two appearances out of the bullpen last year when he came up at the end of the year. But yeah, man, they need some guys who can have length and also just guys who can get outs. Remember, Keegan Thompson and Alzolay were supposed to be your two kind of bulk guys in a well-functioning bullpen.
Yeah.
And Keegan's obviously gone. Michael Rucker's been a long guy of late, been a mop-up guy. Gave up seven runs, or I guess it was five runs on seven hits over like 63 pitches the other day, threw 50 pitches the appearance before that. So, yeah, Wesneski bulk and hasn't done it. A desperate times, man. They need to do more stuff like this.
So that's the thing, right? This is threading a needle. It's a desperate move.
For sure.
But I applaud it.
Have to.
If it blows up, they'll take criticism for it. But I will be one who will say, hey, you've tried every other relief pitcher arm that you have here.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do?
Keegan Thompson was a starter, and then you found a way to utilize him, and he took to it.
Yeah.
Hopefully Wesneski does. We had Burnsy. I had to ask Burnsy to ask, and he did ask, and then about husbanding resources.
Yeah, and then he asked it in the smuggest way possible, but he did ask it. He did ask it.
And here they are doing it.
They're husbanding the resources of Hayden Wesneski to the bullpen.
Which I think is the kind of desperate move they need to do more of. Fiddle and diddle with your bullpen as best you can. Absolutely.
So, in that vein, I have a baseball question that incorporates the White Sox and the Cubs together. And unfortunately for you, it will not focus solely on the positives of yesterday.
Oh, man, you just don't want to break down the Stroman one-hitter all day?
It was amazing.
Yeah, we already did it.
It will come up.
We already did
that Stroman one-hitter can really get you.
It will get you. You got to be dangerous with the Stroman one-hitter.
You never know. Yeah. Better have a full stomach.
Packs a punch, man.
It's a much bigger bowl than you're expecting.
Yeah. Right. Stroman's one-hitter is like another person's three or four-hitter.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It'll get you every time. But no, we'll talk about it briefly.
Okay.
And then we're going to have to, move it on. It's, we're afternooning it over here. It's Parkinson's Speak on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.